Welcome to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast, where we focus on the people, the products, and the process of e-commerce selling today. Here's your host, Stephen Peterson.
Welcome back to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast. This is episode 44, Chris Potter. Chris's story is the phoenix rising from the ashes, right? It's the hero going in, having some success, dealing with, hate to use the word failure, but it is, you know, falling. How about we call it falling? I think that's a better term. But then again, rising. And I think rising, maybe with some armor, some guardrails, I call them in the podcast. And I think Chris's story is just one that will resonate well with you. This first segment, we spent some time just how the business grew. And we're not talking a small business. I mean, he's got some major revenues in this business, and we talk about how he got there, and I think that's a really interesting story. So let's get into the podcast. All right, welcome back to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast. And tonight's guest, I guess, reinvented, came back out again, got a little knocked down, rose up in a big way, and it's just an amazing story. Hey, welcome, Chris Potter. Welcome, Chris.
Hey, how's it going? It's nice to be on your podcast. I'm definitely privileged to be on here. I've been listening to your podcast for a while, and I know we've been going back and forth trying to schedule this, so it's great to finally be able to do it.
You know how much I appreciate it, and I wanted to get to your story, but you've got a family, and you know what? Your family is really important, and I appreciate that is what drove the time. You know what I mean? I get that, and I really appreciate that, because that's where your intention should be. So I do appreciate that. I have grandkids, and they're way important for me, so I get it. You know, Chris, I'm not that familiar with your story, right? And I intentionally didn't read up on it very much, because I really wanted to, you know, react a little bit. You and I met at CES3 in Louisville. At a party with beards and beer. There was a lot of both. Just leave that where it is. But we had such a great conversation, and I just remember you tell me a little bit of your story, and you were like, Steve, you do know my story. Like, you know, and I guess you have that, you wear that as a badge in some way, right? It's not a scarlet letter, but it's something that you were like, are you sure you really want to talk with me? And I'm like, yeah, I love the comeback, and I think it's such a great story, and I can't wait to get into it. But let's go back even further. Where, you know, the fact that you're an entrepreneur a couple times, I mean, where does that come from? Were your parents entrepreneurs, uncles, grandparents, or something?
No, I actually don't have any idea where it even came from, to be honest with you. I've been an entrepreneur really since probably I was 18 years old, somewhere around there. And going back even before I started selling online, I had a mail order business that tanked. I had a business where I was actually selling newspapers of family events to other family members. That was always fun, especially the one where we were at a get together, and I was taking how many inches of snow we had in the ground. Everyone had to drive home, and they weren't exactly a very big fan of the fact that there was 6 inches of snow on the ground. I was making sure I was reporting it on the newspaper to everyone at the event. So, but yeah, I mean, I really don't even know where it came from. It's just something I've always wanted to do. So, I don't know.
Well, it's just interesting to me, though, you know, if you don't grow up in a family of entrepreneurs, where's that spark come from? Are you, do you have an art interest in any way? Are you creative? Are you musically inclined?
No, not at all, actually. I think it just has to do more with, I've always been interested in the business sense of things. I've always been interested in business. I've been interested in numbers and all that type of good stuff. So okay. I think maybe that's kind of where it stemmed from.
Okay, and so you'd see a story about a business and you'd want to find out more about it. You'd be intrigued by it, that kind of thing.
Oh, yeah.
And then you went into retail at one time, correct?
Yeah, actually, I worked at Best Buy for about 12 years. I actually started as a cashier, and I worked myself all the way up to assistant managers. They were preparing me to be a general manager of a store and kind of going up the whole district and regional ranks. And I had decided that wasn't the option I really wanted to go with, so I actually started selling part-time while I was working at Best Buy.
It's an intriguing business, and their model is in a cycle that I just don't know. I went into one recently, and I couldn't believe the appliances that were in there. I'm like, oh boy, I don't remember Best Buy having appliances. Apparently have, and I'm not a, you know, I don't shop that much in the stores. I'm more of an online shopper myself. And I was surprised the difference in the store since I had remember it. It's a very difficult business to compete against, like an Amazon, that brick and mortar model.
Yeah, I mean, I left there in 2008, so it's not like I actually started there in 1996.
Wow.
Yeah.
Way back.
Yeah, I was.
I didn't even know they were in business back then.
Yeah, it was 1996 when I started. I was actually 16 years old when I started with Best Buy, and by the time I was just turning 18, I actually became in a leadership position at that point when I was 18. So
that's funny. Hey, think about that. You know, it's just so funny to think about. You always think, oh, those are like kids running the place. Well, in your case, it really was, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah. For a long time, I was the youngest person that was working in our store because they stopped hiring people under 18 shortly after I got hired in. So for like 2 years, I was the youngest, those youngest guy in the place. And then as soon as I turned 18, they're like, all right, here's the keys, run the department.
Were you more sales or technical?
I was actually originally in customer service, actually. So okay. I actually ran through customer service, and then I actually became a customer service manager for a while and operations manager. So I dealt with HR and all the good stuff. And then once I made a decision I didn't want to move up to general manager and those type of things, then I actually got moved to I moved up north in Saginaw, Michigan, to a different location, and at the time I didn't have any positions available that were in customer service. So they're like, well, what do you know about computers? And I'm like, well, I know about computers pretty well. And so they're like, all right, you can be the Geek Squad supervisor.
Oh, that's cool. So did you actually go out on the road with those in a little – they're the ones with the little bugs, right?
Yeah, they are. And actually, when I took it over, they weren't even Geek Squad yet. They still had, like, the black shirts, and they were just a services department. So okay. they sent me out and had me train with some people for a while to learn how to remove spyware and all sorts of good stuff. And then I was actually there for the rollout of Geek Squad, and I was actually the – basically the lead guy in the store that ran the entire department. And then I was also the guy who managed the people who went out to your houses.
And you know, from my little bird's eye view, that really took off for a long time, the Geek Squad did. I don't know if it still has, but boy, they really seem to rise up. Are they still popular?
I honestly have no idea.
Okay. Yeah. I would never think about having somebody come in. I mean, I couldn't, you know, I'd have to do it myself. But it just, you know, for a while there, they seemed to catch on, and I don't know if it ever really transitioned well. I almost thought they would stand alone, like separate them off in one way.
Yeah, they actually were a different company at one point. They originally started in Minneapolis, Minnesota, and Best Buy actually bought them out, and then they just rolled the whole thing out.
What did you learn? You know, so customer service, obviously you're good with people, you're good with staff if you're, you know, you're leading people there. What did you learn from the Geek Squad that transferred over to your entrepreneurial world?
Probably the best part of it, obviously the whole aspect of managing people and managing labor, managing all that type of good stuff, understanding numbers, that all comes into play with selling online and being an entrepreneur. But the computer aspects of it, which for me kind of led into being able to do a lot of the other random things I've done in my entrepreneurial past, what it happens to do with operating blogs and websites, I have a rudimentary understanding of HTML and CSS, and there's a lot of things that have to do with the computer that I know a ton about because of that experience I had with Best Buy running the Geek Squad.
So it almost prepared you for this next venture in your life, it seems like, right?
Somewhat. I would say the first aspects of learning the management aspect was probably a higher priority over anything else. I had a mentor in that company that really was grooming me to be a high-level manager. So she did a lot to really help me understand how to manage people, how to talk to people, how to sit, you know, do sales, anything you can think of. Not to mention I had departments running so well that I didn't really have to do a whole lot. So I also learned how to play with Excel and do all sorts of spreadsheets and stuff at the same time.
So all those skills, again, transfer over very well into this e-commerce world and eventually, you know, into where you're at today. But that's getting ahead of ourselves, right? Because you did create your own business, right? Now, was it right after Best Buy? You started selling while you were in Best Buy. Where were you selling, on eBay?
Yeah, I actually started in 2005 selling on eBay. and the types of items I was selling on eBay were actually as CNTV products.
Oh, okay. So I would expect them to be electronics just because of where you worked, but they were as seen on TV. So as seen on TV was really just getting started, right? They didn't even have the retail stores by then, did they?
Nope, they weren't in retail, and the reason why I went to that market was mainly because it was just a market gap. So there really wasn't a whole lot of people selling that particular item. There was margins in it, and it was semi-easy to get once you had the connections on how to find those items. So it took me a little
I was going to say, how did that happen along? I mean, it's not a random item. How did you find that and recognize the gap? I guess that's the question I'm asking.
I think it had to do with I was looking for popular items and that really didn't have a really big you really couldn't find a whole lot on eBay as well as looking for. I was just kind of looking for something that wasn't well represented on eBay, but had a very good brand name and was recognizable. So you saw the commercials all the time. I knew they weren't in retail stores yet. So that at the time, they weren't even in Walmarts or any of the big box stores yet. And so my goal was to try and figure out, I immediately saw there was just a gap there.
Oh, it makes sense because, you know, you're afraid to call those 1-800 numbers. You don't want to get on their lists and everything else. And so I can see, you know, it's just interesting that you recognize that because eBay is so unassuming, right, relative to calling an 800 number and getting on those lists and never getting off and whether you really get your product. It's a safer route for a lot of people. It's interesting that you recognize that. I think that's really a keen eye because I can see that being a great outlet at that time. So that's really interesting. Okay, so you started that business working out of your house at that point?
Yeah, I was just selling stuff out of my house and did that for a few years just part-time. And while I was still working full-time at Best Buy, and at one point I had gotten to, I think it was 2007, I had about $180,000 revenue or something just out of my basement selling on eBay. So it wasn't too bad.
Oh, my gosh. That's incredible. I mean, that you know, to be $15,000 a month on an eBay. What were your margins back then? Because you were buying it retail, I assume. Or were you buying a wholesale?
Well, I was actually buying a wholesale. I was buying it, buying it from distributors. And so at that point, I would say we're probably making about 20, 25%, somewhere around there.
Okay. So you'd mark it up Keystone, and then by the time they took out their fees, you were down to 20-25%. But it was pretty easy to handle, right, because it's one listing. I mean, that's the beauty of eBay with that kind of stuff, right? It's one listing, boom, it's up. It's like a vending machine. It just sells, and you just keep replenishing it, right?
Exactly.
Did the packages – here's a question for you, because I just think about that stuff. The wholesale packages, did they come pre-boxed, ready to ship for you in a master case or something like that?
It depended on the item. In some cases, they were actually in retail packaging, which is odd because they didn't really sell them in retail packaging much. Hmm. They were mainly for like the SCNTV stores that you'd see in malls is mostly right. What they were packaging them for. Or you would get them in mail order packaging, which is a brown box that just had everything in there, which is how they would ship customers that were actually buying it on the TV.
But that's perfect for you, right? I mean, that just makes it efficient. You slap a label on it, and you already knew the weight and everything else, and you could just slap a label on it. So you can move a lot of product. I could see that being pretty cool.
Yeah, as time went on, and you know, it started getting to the point to where a lot of the retail stores started carrying products, and that was more of their overall strategy was to get them into retail. Then you pretty much saw nothing but retail packaging.
And so then it becomes more labor intensive, and you start that 25%. Well, now I got to buy a box, and a box is 50 cents, and now I got to tape it. Now I got labor to do that work. So all of a sudden, the margins start to shrink a little bit, right?
Yeah, the margins started shrinking on that end, and the margins started shrinking because the big box stores are carrying them as well. And that the actual time window you had to actually make margins on it were much smaller, too. So it's a very similar cycle to what you're currently seeing on Amazon, where you have to look for that gap of items that Amazon happens to not be carrying and still have that margin of window to where that margin window where product comes to market from your wholesaler or wherever it's coming from. And there's that very small time window and time frame. And that's kind of the same thing I was running into on eBay back then.
Hmm. So you recognize that and you see that now. That's interesting. Okay. So you're still working out of your house. You're generating 180 grand, which, you know, still pretty good amount of money, especially then. What's next?
All right, so in 2008, me and my soon-to-be wife had decided to that we were going to get married and we had a child coming on the way. So we were debating on what to do, and I said, well, how about this? How about I do my business full-time, and you can still work at Best Buy as we both worked at Best Buy, and so I'll quit Best Buy, work full-time, take care of our child, and she would continue to work full-time. So it sounded good in theory, and so she was due in October. I left Best Buy in late July, and so I immediately started putting 100% of my effort into that business. So I started looking for different things I could sell. So I was trying to figure out, all right, where's the gap? Where's the gap at again? Because the SCNTV products were starting to get saturated, and I had to figure something else out. So because the time frame was July, August-ish, the first kind of market that came to mind to me was the Halloween market. So I started looking into the Halloween market to see if there was a gap there. And there was. Halloween wasn't well represented at the time on eBay. And I contacted suppliers and got a hold of some suppliers and started bringing product in. And by the time the end of October hit, I had something like $300,000 of revenue out of my basement while my child was being born.
That's incredible. And you know, I'm thinking about, you know, now Halloween's saturated, right, where they pop up. I don't know if they do this in your market, but the empty big box stores all of a sudden has a Halloween store, you know, 60 days before Halloween, and now they're gone, right? And they're bringing in the same stuff, and they just keep bringing it and bringing it. Or you have dollar stores now that sell Halloween-related junk, right?
Oh, yeah.
That wouldn't have existed, really. I mean, there wouldn't have been a way to get that stuff. The Oriental Trading, or I think that magazine, right, that was out there. There wouldn't have been an easy way to get it. You would have bought it at Kmart or, I guess, Walmart and that kind of thing. So online, you know, as you're saying, so you were able to recognize it. Did you take a different approach, or was it just wholesale put their packaging out again, or were you creatively saying, you know, here's a Halloween in a box, any bundling or anything like that to help enhance revenues?
No, I immediately just got it wholesale and just resold it. It was buying a wholesale and resell. And, you know, by the end of that year, I had almost $400,000 revenue just on eBay. Yes, just
that's incredible. That's so hard to do. And were you working alone at that point?
I had hired a friend to help do packaging, and for a while my wife now was actually helping out packing as well.
In between baby duty.
Yeah,
I understand that.
Yeah. So what ended up happening was I realized that I just couldn't take care of baby and work the business at the same time. And so we had to make a decision on what to do. And the decision prior to my wife having to go back to work on maternity leave is that she would just quit her job too. And I would just do it 100% full-time and go all in. So in the beginning of 2009, we both left our Best Buy jobs, which was bringing us, you know, 120, 130,000 combined in, you know, not revenue, that's actual, you know, income.
Right.
And we dropped that to do this 100% full-time in 2008, at the beginning of 2009.
Wow. That's a bold move, my friend. I mean, that's a bold move. So you're not afraid of risk, are you?
No, not at all.
Okay. And I know that story's going to come up, and I'm assuming that that's going to come be part of the discussion. It'll really be interesting to see that. So you're thinking, all right, so she comes full-time in the business. You're full-time. Is your friend still there too?
Well, she actually didn't come in full-time in the business at all. She actually was there to take care of baby, and then I did everything full time. And
I get what you're saying.
Yeah, I had a friend at the time that was kind of helping out. He didn't help out a ton, but he helped out some.
So you gave up your baby duty so she could have it full time during the day. I get it. Now.
Exactly.
I misunderstood. Okay, so you're still in the house.
Yep. And at the beginning of 2009, it started getting pretty crazy where my entire basement was just flooded full of product. The garage was just full of product. You couldn't move in there. So I had to make a decision to get out of the house. So beginning of 2009, is about March or so, we actually got into our own warehouse at that point.
Okay. And so this was still up north, right, in the tundra of Michigan?
Yeah, it was in Michigan at this point. It was in Saginaw, Michigan area.
Okay. And so you got warehouse cheap space, I assume, up there?
It was relatively cheap space. I think it was like maybe $1,000 a month or something like that. It wasn't terrible.
But it supports the marriage. That's all I always, you know, that's the marriage. That's what I always say. The warehouse was one of the best things for my marriage, getting it out of the house. And so you're now in the warehouse, you and your buddy. You're going to your business every day. It's not a job, right? You're going to your business every day. You're still selling on eBay. Now, at this point, have you thought about getting on the Amazon Marketplace? What year was this?
2009 is actually when we got on. That was actually the year we got on Amazon. It was actually 2009.
Okay, and were you merchant fulfilled at that point, or did you jump right into FBA?
We did merchant fulfilled for, I believe, probably the first half to most of 2009, and then we started going to FBA late, I believe, 2009.
And you know, one thing I have a question about. So you're selling a lot of Halloween stuff at this point still, or had you expanded into other holidays?
It was mostly Halloween, and we had some other products as well, like bobbleheads, before Amazon just totally demolished that market. And there was a few other items that we carried too.
And so were you weren't sending in low-priced merchandise for FBA, were you? Or was it, you know, costumes and blow-ups and stuff like that?
Yeah, it was costumes. We had accessories. We had, you know, all sorts of random stuff.
You know, I think about, you know, I'm looking at average selling price all the time and always thinking about that. You know, and the fees have obviously gone up over time. As time has gone, as they've expanded, their fees have gone up. But I always wonder, you know, what would have been your average selling price back then? And have you been able to successfully kill a whole bunch of that low margin, let's face it, right? It's fast turning, but it's still low margin because of the workload. Have you ever looked back at those numbers to see, you know, what the old days were like?
I haven't actually done that in a while. I don't think I actually had anything that tracked the ASP at that point. Okay. So I don't think I could even really go back and look at that at this point.
It just interests me. You know, it's one of those things I think a lot about, you know, because I just interviewed Todd Lamy, and, you know, Todd talks about moving from – he was doing mostly kitchen and home stuff. And he moved to shoes and clothing, and he doubled his average selling price this past year, and he's doubled his sales. But he's like, I'm doing half the work, you know, and it's like, that sounds kind of smart, you know. And so whenever I see I recently bought a lot of Halloween stuff, and it was so low margin on a lot of it, I had to sell it through a different channel because it's just so – it's not worth the time. I mean, you get to that place and it's like, ooh, you can make 38 cents. And I'm like, I'm not going to make 38 cents. I'm good. I'm good. So, well, it's interesting. And so you're in a warehouse now, and had the business – did it become the Click Ship business yet?
Yeah, actually, at that point we actually had changed the name to – ClickShip Commerce is what we had changed it to.
Okay, so what was the concept? What were you thinking? What was the vision, right? If I had to put down on a, you know, business plan, what did you think it could be?
Well, what we started doing is, at the time, SEO was easy to somewhat manipulate at the time. Mm-hmm. So we actually started creating niche websites for Halloween, and we had probably, I don't know, like 40, 50, 60 domains, something like that. We had a domain for, like, buy Star Wars costumes, get Harry Potter costumes, all these different niches. And so we started actually building out these different websites. We also built out a main website as well, which was bestcostumesite.com at the time. And our whole goal was, at this point, to kind of funnel everything from those niche sites into the main site, which was Best Costume Site. And also at the same time to have eBay, Amazon, buy.com at the time, and any other marketplaces. We had to kind of have this huge just funnel of stuff coming in. And so we had that, and we also had an SCN TV products website where we sold just SCN TV products. Then we also had another site, which is a gift site, which is just pottersgifts.com at the time.
Okay, so all these things are coming in, right? So if I'm looking at – if I do a Google search for Star Wars – costume, you would have landed pretty high up in the rank, and that would have drove me to that site. I would have had an option to click on Amazon, your link on Amazon, or your link in eBay or buy.com.
It was actually,
is that kind of the premise?
It was actually all website based. We actually didn't try and drive any traffic to Amazon.
Oh, so it was like a shopping cart then, even?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay. Wow. And how much of your sales, were you able to move sales there from eBay and Amazon?
We did. We moved some. I mean, we were always marketplace heavy. I would say that our high point for website sales versus marketplace sales was maybe 10 to 15% of revenue. It was never huge.
Yeah. Okay. All right. I thought so. I think the effort, you know, I think, you know, as I see the vision, you know, because I think when you're going in and you're designing a business, you know, you have this vision for what it's going to be. And usually it doesn't turn out to be anything like that, right? You know, and so, you know, that's where I'm going, is trying to understand it. So you had this vision that this was going to happen. What else did you see? Did you see, I mean, were you going to expand into retail? Or, I mean, where was it going to go?
I tried all sorts of different theories. One theory was that we were going to have potentially pop-up Halloween stores. I actually tested that theory out at one point with our warehouse at one point where we just opened up the warehouse to Halloween buyers. That was an epic fail.
But it didn't work. Now, it does work today, right? And I don't know how it works, to be honest with you. I'm not certain how they do it. Other than they go into very – well, I guess the difference is they're not doing it at a warehouse. They're doing it in a proven retail traffic area. That makes sense.
That's the huge difference, is that they're actually merchandising for, you know, for sales. We weren't merchandised. It was pretty much, we had a warehouse, we had stuff there, so bright idea, hey, why don't we open the doors and say, hey, we have Halloween costumes you can't find anywhere else locally, come on in and get them. And I'm sure that if we had actually put a lot of time and effort into building it, it probably wouldn't have been a fail. But when I knew that a good majority of our revenue and time and effort would give us the biggest bang for the buck online, it just didn't make sense to go the retail route. So that's why I kind of cut it out after 1 year.
Hmm. So that didn't work, right? And the SEO stuff is marginal, right? You're having a little bit of success, but not driving the traffic that you had. And so what was the next thing you tried?
Well, everything kind of started shifting over to Amazon.
Okay.
It got to the point to where eBay was more of a hassle than it was to do anything else, so we actually just stopped selling on eBay and put almost all of our eggs in the basket into Amazon.
And what percentage was merchant fulfilled versus FBA at that point?
I would say probably around 2010, 2011, we started shifting pretty much everything to FBA as much as we could.
Okay, and how many employees were you at that point?
We had probably, I would say in 2010, we probably had maybe 8.
Oh, wow. Well, I want you to take me up to the point where things didn't go right. So I don't want to get past that point. So you have 8 employees. You're now moving really into FBA heavy. You're having success. You're still selling Halloween stuff. You're still selling your As Seen on TV, whatever that was, you know, the ones that were still sellers, right, the other stuff that didn't work. You're with the bobblehead stuff, the sports-related stuff, did that start to dwindle already, or was that still on its way up?
We still carry some of that stuff. We started doing what a lot of Amazon sellers are now doing, which is trying to find every wholesaler they possibly can just to see what Amazon isn't selling. So we started going down that route, and we carried all sorts of random stuff. I mean, there was a lot.
How did you find it? Who did that work? Who did the research on the products? Was it you mostly?
I did a good chunk of it. We also had an employee that I trained that was actually doing a lot of that work as well.
Okay, so you were smart enough to know that you could have somebody else learn that. You were able to transfer that skill over and help them help you, right, find other products. I think that's a smart move as opposed to having more processors, right? You're finding more because you're moving your processing out as fast as you can, right?
Yep.
You want more product coming through. And at that point, you know, what were your annual sales, if you don't mind me asking?
We built up at one point. We went from 850,000 in 2010. Then we went to about 2.4 million in 2011. In 2012, we went to just a shade under 3.5 million.
Okay, so you saw really serious growth. I mean, that's a real serious growth phase. How was cash flow at that point? I mean, were you able? I mean, because that's one of the big negatives. You're putting out big outlays. Money's coming in, but it's probably going out as fast as it's coming in, right?
Yeah, it was kind of a two-legged monster because on the Halloween side, I was able to negotiate huge, I guess you could say loans. Lines of credit, that's the word I was looking for. Looking for huge lines of credit with suppliers. And on the Halloween side of the business, by the time 2012 hit, I was able to secure over probably about $1.25 million of supplier debt I was able to do with suppliers. And the way that business worked as far as the type of loans that I had with them is that in January, I would go in and place the orders for October. And
right.
when you place those orders then, they then start sending you the orders in March, basically anywhere from March up until August is when they start sending stuff depending on the supplier. And in a lot of cases, you don't actually have to pay for any of this product until November.
And so the idea is, right, like the way retail works, is they get it in, they get it marked, they're marking it at 100%, right? They're trying to sell it at 100%, and then eventually they start marking it down. And by the time they get down to just about nothing, they have averaged out to their, you know, whatever 70% of retail net is, and then they pay the supplier, and then they make their margin, right? That's really the way retail stores work. And so yours is a similar operation in the scenario you're describing.
Yeah. Pretty much, I don't really have to put up any money up front to get a lot of this product because the previous years we had this huge growth, and we were proving to them that we were able to sell through our products and able to manage the cash flow aspects of it. And so they just kept upping our limits. I kept pushing it and kept pushing it. But the challenge was is that as I pushed that Halloween side, I was unable to really push the limits on anything else that was not Halloween related. And what that caused the entire business to happen is that we started shifting to where most of our sales are now Halloween items.
Okay.
Because I didn't have enough cash to be able to handle doing nearly as much sales as I could do in Halloween. For example, in 2012, we did over $1 million in sales in October.
Oh, wow.
Out of the $3.5 million, we did $1 million in October, and in September we did somewhere around like $600,000 to $700,000. So
almost half of your sales were in those
2 months.
2 months.
Yeah, and the challenge is that, yes, I didn't have to pay off suppliers for that, but then there's all this prep that you have to go into to prepare for this, because you have to have a warehouse to be able to bring everything in, and you have to manage the whether you want to pay fees in Amazon's warehouses or do you want to store in your own warehouse. You have to have people come in to process it. And you got to handle all this stuff. And so you're outlaying all this money for labor and processing with no real return on anything until September and October. And the rest of the year, we're selling other products that aren't Halloween related, but we only maybe had $200,000 to $250,000 of working capital to handle all of that, which meant that our monthly sales were maybe $100,000 to $150,000 in revenue, which sounds like a lot, but when you're trying to generate enough income to handle that big of an upflow, you have all these fixed expenses to go along with it that spread out over the year, and you kind of have to manage a cash flow. And yes, it was extremely difficult to do it.
Well, and I want to talk about that because I think this is a great example of the thought process, and we're going to talk about this. Okay, so let's take a break, and we're going to get into that. Be right back. Today's podcast is brought to you by Seller Essentials, essential business solution for online sellers. Whether you sell general merchandise on Amazon or eBay, private label your own product, or if your focus is selling books, wholesale products, or liquidation lots, let Seller Essentials be your online resource for all things e-commerce. Essential resources, essential solutions, Seller Essentials, the Internet's premier venue for online professional. Visit SellerEssentials.com for more information. That's SellerEssentials.com. All right, I know you're sitting on the edge of your seat. You know what's coming, right? You know, you've seen the movie when you know what's going to happen. And it does happen just as pretty much as you're going to think it happens, you know. But Chris's candor and his honesty, they're refreshing, you know. He acknowledges the mistakes he made. He acknowledged the fork in the road, and he decided to go this way. Looking back, it probably wasn't the right choice, but that's what he did. And we all make those kind of decisions with the information at hand. A couple great takeaways, though. You know, build risk into your model. You must build risk. Chris will also give you, I think it's four absolutes that he has, three or four. And I think they're just so sound, you're going to sit there, oh, that's common sense. Let me tell you, we all make those choices. We've all made bad choices. And so it's great to hear somebody say, you know, I'm doing it, but I'm not going to do it the same way. I'm rising up and I'm going to be successful. And let me tell you, he is successful. He shares his sales figures, and it's well over seven figures today from a great business that he lost. And so he's been able to do it again, and so can you. So let's get back into the podcast. All right, we're back, and we're talking with Chris Potter. And Chris, a very successful Amazon seller, and we're talking about his first round with Amazon and his explosive growth. And what's interesting to me, a couple things that I'm taking back from it, right? So as you pointed out, you started to rely on one channel, specifically holiday, and specifically even more narrow, right, just down to Halloween, being 50% of your sales. The only thing that would separate you from anybody else with those products was your ability to get them, and I'm sure at that point everybody else is starting to get access to those products as those companies are trying to push out. So that's probably issue number one. Number two, the only competitive advantage you would end up having as Amazon starts expanding is price, right? I mean, really, that's it.
Yep, and we competed hard on price. I mean, when a lot of people in a lot of the different Facebook groups and other areas complain about the lowballers, we weren't lowballers, but we were heavily competitive on price because we were getting it cheaper than pretty much anyone else was because
you're buying a volume,
exactly,
right?
Exactly. We were buying such high volume. We were getting it about as cheap as anyone else could, with the exception of people who are buying it, you know, at clearance pricing a year before or getting liquidation pricing. That's about the only way that people are getting it cheaper than what we were buying it for.
But that does happen. And, you know, we were just on vacation and we were there for Halloween. Halloween's over. The next day, well, they had sidewalk sales in the town we were in, and they were selling costumes on the day before Halloween. The day after Halloween, they were still holding their sidewalk sales. Everything was down to, like, you know, 10% or 20%, right? Because they got to get rid of this stuff because next year it's going to be other stuff. And plus that plastic doesn't sit well for a year. I mean, it starts to decay almost in some ways, right? So what would you say? I mean, did you see the writing on the wall at that point? Now that you've had this time to look back, and I don't want to make you feel bad about this or whatever, but I know you've learned some lessons and you're out there trying to teach people lessons, right? That's your big thing, is you want people not to make the same mistakes that you did. Did you see something on the wall, the writing on the wall that you ignored, that you rationalized?
In 2012, which, you know, we haven't actually gotten to the part of the story where
Okay, well, so you're still growing, but you're having trouble, right? You're having trouble with cash flow. Things aren't really aligning for you. You're not seeing growth in the other pieces because you don't have the capital to invest. So I guess that's the start of the trouble. Keep going. I'm sorry.
Yeah, and so in 2012, based on the results from 2011, I could see that in 2011, 2012, things were going pretty smoothly as we rolled into 2013. But there were some kinks in the armor, and the kinks in the armor at the end of 2012 really had to do with, you know, the margins were starting to get really tight. Amazon was starting to come in on a lot of products that we weren't expecting to come in on. So I had to make a decision on where I wanted the company to go at this point, and either the choice really was to somewhat downgrade and start specializing in certain aspects, or to just pump more money into the business and pump it as hard as I possibly can and start diversifying in other areas. And so the decision that I had made was to start looking for money and to start pumping it even harder.
Okay, so you were going to go, hey, I have a proven model. It's working. I'm going. I just interviewed Brandon Dubsky, and very similar story. You know, hey, I've been successful this whole time. I know what works. I know how to make money. I'm going to do more of it. And in his world, he kind of ignored a bunch of the same things. He's things that he couldn't control. I mean, ultimately, that's what happened with him. And in your case, Amazon coming in on a product that you don't expect, right? You know what they're going to do. It's odd that they get into these other niches. Do you think some of it was because of your success? They said, hey, here's a product line. I mean, I'm sure they're looking at our data saying, hey, here's something that we're not on, and looks like he's making money. We can make money too.
I don't think there's any doubt that they were doing that.
Yeah, no question, right? So it's, again, something you can't control, but you still have to factor in, right? And I think that's, to me, you know, the hardest thing for people to admit, and I'm guilty of it, is risk, right? People need to factor risk. And at this point, you're still not factoring risk because you're borrowing money, right? You're going to the wall.
Oh, yeah.
So, all right, take us there.
Yeah, so I actually was able to secure $330,000 of credit at this point to get us a larger warehouse and to where I could hire more employees and effectively fund the business going into 2013. And so I made projections based on what we did in 2012, which was $3.5 million. I made projections that we were going to do, you know, $4.5 million in 2013. And so I made projections. I made the yearly projections out of this. And at this point, we had somewhere around 20 employees. We got in a 25,000 square foot building, and wow, we were bringing in a ton of product. And we started going through a lot of different things in 2013, and what ended up happening was there's basically just anything that could have happened in 2013 that could have went wrong in 2013. And what I mean by that is we started trying to switch over to new software platforms because the software we were using just wasn't working for us anymore. And there was no software on the market that could really do what we need to do at this point. So we tried multiple different software solutions. We finally went to an enterprise solution where we spent $36,000 to actually set up this enterprise solution.
Was it to manage your inventory? Is that what you were trying to do?
Yeah, I was managing inventory, managing the entire process because we were doing merchant fulfilled and we were doing FBA. And partially one of the strategies we used was by blanketing ASINs, where everyone knows that any particular product could have 5 or 6 ASINs for literally the exact same product. And we would actually blanket those ASINs. In some cases, we would send some FBA, we would do some merchant fulfilled, and we had to have software to basically tell us when we need to send stuff into FBA to keep the supply there based on the different ASINs, and to tie all those back into the same exact UPC code. And there was just nothing on the market that could do this.
And so you went and found some off the shelf, but enterprise level, and then tried to customize it for yourself in some
exactly
way, or tried to make it work.
Exactly.
And $36,000 was the purchase price, but what about the time and the employees and the dedication and your time, right?
Yeah. I mean, we went through this process for 6 months, and we went through probably mm-hmm. 5 or 6 different solutions before we finally settled on this one. And the transition period between our old solutions and the new one was just an absolute nightmare. At one point, we couldn't even – all of our merchant fulfillment was fully shut off at one point. And this is in the month of March when most of our stuff was merchant fulfilled because we hadn't sent it to FBA. We had all the stuff coming in. We couldn't do anything with it because we had no inventory system to handle it. We were effectively down for about a month, and our sales just tanked that month. And when I mean tanked, I mean we were expecting to do $175,000, and we did something like $14,000.
Oh, my goodness. How do you make payroll, right? So looking back at that decision, right, looking back, do you think there was anything that you could have done differently? You know, I mean, again, trying to help people not go down the same road. Trust me, Brandon Dubsky's done the same thing. He spent $500,000 on his software. And he would tell you, never buy software. Don't buy warehouse. He outsources every piece of it, every square inch of it now. But it's a similar subject. You know, it's kind of back to where you were going to create your own websites to do the thing. You know what I mean?
Yep.
It's thinking that, you know, what would you do differently? Do you think there was something that you could have done differently looking back at that step, just at that point?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the solution would have been is just to create ourselves.
Okay, so you would have done it yourself.
Yeah, just create ourselves, which is what we ended up doing, because after we went through this whole process of there being all these problems, I looked at it and I was like, this is costing us more money than it's going to make us long term. So we ended up dumping that solution. After we spent $36,000 for integration, and we ended up dumping that solution and started building it in-house, which, you know, I had a full-time person, 2 full-time people working on it in-house, which was not cheap. And so they started building our in-house solutions for that. And so that was one big problem that happened that year. Then we had a warehouse manager that wasn't doing his job properly, and the warehouse was just a mess. I ended up having to fire him halfway through the year.
Yeah. Now, why would you let that go on? Right now, you know, this isn't a criticism,
yep,
but I mean, what, looking back again, right, looking for the signs, what would you do different there? You did eventually fire him. Were there signs that you should have dealt with sooner?
You could look at any situation and say, yeah, you should have done it sooner. In this case, I actually went through a lot of processes to try and get him to where he needed to be.
Right. Yeah, and you want to do that. You want to bring him up, and you want to bring everybody along, right? I get that. I mean, I understand that. But, I'm looking – I know there's not one simple thing for the reason that the business failed, right? I know there's not one thing. But it's just looking at it again, just looking back, because I know you're not making these mistakes now, and I know we're going to get to that. So that didn't go right. The software didn't go right. What else didn't go right?
Well, remember how I said that Amazon was starting to come onto a lot of products? Well, in this particular year, they came in hard on a lot of products, and they started merging ASINs like mad. Mm. And so there were certain cases where we were ordering 1,000 units of something based on the fact that we could sell on these secondary ASINs that had no Amazon competition. And after we had already ordered everything, had all the Amazon, then Amazon combined the ASINs, which made us compete against Amazon. And they did this on a ton of the items that we carried that we just didn't expect them to do it. And so you combine that, and then you combine the fact that there were some licenses that didn't do well that year, so they just didn't sell through very well. And you add in the fact that there was more competition on Amazon at this point. And I could tell a lot of people overbought in certain areas because the pricing just really just started tanking badly. So you kind of just add all this up together. And I knew going into Halloween that we would have to have a spectacular Halloween for us to make it through to make the business keep going. And we did not have a spectacular Halloween. We went through – our margins would have had to been 20-22%, somewhere around there, in order to be able to make it through. And we would have had to do, I think it was about $2 to $2.5 million between September and October. And we ended up doing something like 1.3 million in sales, and our margins were 16%.
And so you couldn't, at that point, I mean, you weren't making enough to even pay for, well, I guess you paid for your cost of goods, or you could have in theory, but would 16% cover labor?
Well, I was able to cover labor. The real challenge was is that in November I had all these bills due for all this product I bought in January.
Right.
That was the problem. So I had I was flush with cash in October, at the end of October, because I had all these sales that came in, but now I've got this pile of massive supplier debt that I now have to pay off. And that's really where the problem lied. And so I'm looking at the supplier debt, and I'm looking at what happened the previous year, and I'm looking at this size warehouse we have now, and I'm at that crossroads again where, what do I do? I could ask for more money, obviously, to try and dig out of it somewhere, or I have to kind of squeeze the business down and get back down to basics, which would have meant to lay off a ton of people and try and figure out what I'm going to do with this 25,000 square foot warehouse, which, I had thought of all these different options on the board. One of them was to outsource prep, like a lot of these prep services are doing now. I actually had thought
they didn't really exist that much back then,
They didn't. And so I actually had thought of doing that in 2013 when we had that problem. But the problem was, is I had the warehouse, but I didn't have any connections to any other Amazon sellers like I do now, to where I could actually find buyers to do that. So I had to throw that off the table. I mean, I thought of everything possible to try and get out of it. And the only reasonable explanation I could come up with was to collapse the business at this point.
I don't think people understand how a warehouse lease works, right? You're on the hook. I mean, it's a liability, and you're on the hook, and they expect to get paid, and they base it. And so that is a liability. If you commit to 5 years at, $5,000 a month, you're on the hook for, $60,000 times five, $300,000 and whatever the escalators are, right? That you're on the hook for it.
Oh, yeah.
For all
it was,
that time.
It was $10,000 a month for this warehouse. And
so
I was in a 3-year lease.
Okay. So you're owing several hundred thousand dollars there. And so – the business collapsed.
Yes.
Did you collapse?
No, I did not. At this point, I had to kind of look at it and say, all right, do I fight through it or do I just collapse it? Because if I fought through it, then we probably could have made it to the other side, but it may have taken years. And I'm talking like 3, 4, 5 years.
And who knows, right? Who knows what would have happened? You could have, but there's nothing certain about that. So, Mr. Non risk averse, right? You're ready to take risk on. So that didn't work out. You were still in Michigan at that point, right?
Actually, we were in Indiana at that point.
Oh, okay. Indiana. All right. So you moved from Michigan to Indiana. Yeah. Okay. All right. So things didn't go so well. Business collapsed. You shut it down. And did you go to work then, or what happened?
Oh, no, I wasn't going back to work. I'm unemployable.
There was no way. You're unemployable, right? You nobody can work, can hold you back, right? So
yeah.
You restarted from that point? Is that when you and your wife said, okay, let's do it again, but let's do it different?
Well, what we did is I started trying to figure out what we were going to do. So obviously, I'm at the point where I'm still closing down the old business and trying to figure out when we're going to do it with our life. And so that's when I started looking into other business models. And so I looked at a few different business models because whatever I did going forward would have to be different from what I was doing before.
Well, all right, let's talk about that because I wanted to see, did you have some absolutes that came away from that? Things that are like, no way am I doing this. I mean, so tell me what some of the absolutes that came away, and probably some are from your spouse, right? She probably has some absolutes that she puts upon you.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. So one of the definite absolutes is being so heavily invested in seasonal product. That's number one, being so heavily invested in that. Number two is buying product so far in advance that you really couldn't figure out what the proper demand is. So we were buying in January to sell in October. And
that's very common in the toy world still,
yeah.
Right? Retailers are buying, and, well, we go to the toy fair.
Yeah.
It's February. You're placing orders for Christmas.
Yeah, and you know, if you're an Amazon seller, it's a very bad way of doing it.
Well, even in a retail world, that's why you saw so many toy stores close, right? It is a very broken system when they can, you know, I mean, think about it. As an Amazon seller, you can instantly know if you could find the product, if you could find Star Wars product, you know it's going to be a hit right now, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so that's a really interesting point that I don't think people understand. So go ahead.
Yeah, and another big absolute would be to not be so leveraged.
Okay.
I was way leveraged in that business, and that's something I will not do again.
Okay. Are you cash only, or will you borrow money?
Oh no, I'll definitely borrow money, but it's a matter of being smarter with it than I was in the past.
Okay. All right. So you're willing to go into semi-debt, but you're not willing to roll it all on 7 like you did. I mean, that's really what you did, right? You put it down on 7 saying it's all, or you pushed all your chips in and it didn't work, right? You're not willing to do that again.
Yeah. You know, what is part of that process that was interesting is what I was able to do is I was able to actually negotiate out of a lot of debt that we had. And so with the suppliers, some of the suppliers actually took back some of their product and we negotiate some of that down. Anything that I was personally liable for, we were able to fully get that paid off. And anything that I wasn't personally liable for, we were able to either get that expunged or we worked our way out of it, basically. So luckily, I was able to come away myself personally scot-free. And the business obviously went under. And all the sweat equity I had into that business and all the actual money that had been built.
Scars.
Over years, yeah.
Yeah, all the scars and the wounds and all that jazz.
Oh, it's still around.
It's still around. Yeah, so, you still wear them.
So, you know, I started looking at these different models, like I mentioned before, and so it had to be drastically different than what I was doing before because it had to be not construed as the same type of business. Otherwise, some of these suppliers could claw back at the new business. So I had to start looking at different business models, and I actually ended up doing something not Amazon related at all. I actually partnered up with someone else on a video company that we worked on for about 2 months that didn't work out. So I went back to Amazon, and this was in 2014 of last year, and I got back onto Amazon. And that's when we started doing retail arbitrage, interestingly enough.
And so you are now buying inventory and turning it within days, right? You're not ordering months in advance. You're literally buying it off the shelf, bringing it. Do you have a warehouse now or a small one? Or
yeah, what we do now is actually the exact same thing I did when I originally started a business in 2005. Is I started on personal credit cards. How I started this business is I did a balance transfer of $10,000, of 0%. So I did a balance transfer, and that was my seed money to start this entire endeavor back up again. I actually put $0 of my own money into it and just did a balance transfer. And so then the goal at that point was to use that seed money to build up as quickly as I possibly could on fast turns as much as I possibly could. And then any subsequent purchases I make after that would have to be paid off by the time the actual bill comes from the credit card company.
And you've been able to do that now for how long?
I started that in August of last year, and now we're, a year and 3 months later, so.
Are you at a place now that you don't have to borrow at all? Are you at a place where you've built up enough cash that you can just self-fund?
Well, I could if I wanted to, but I like credit card rewards too much.
Okay. All right. But you have the money set aside. So again, you're not rolling it on seven. You're taking light risk. You're not making fatal choices, right?
That's correct.
Death or not, right? You don't want those doors, right? They're pretty bad. So looking back, right, this is a crazy story of a lot of entrepreneurs, though. I think, when you look at the successful ones, they talk about, they failed 30 times before they found the right one. Do you think you're at a place now you have private label, you have a bunch of other stuff. Do you feel like you're at a place now that you've settled into a model that works?
Without a doubt.
In today?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, without a doubt. I mean, I have a much better pulse on what's going on now than I did even 3 years ago. And so I have a much better pulse of the marketplaces and where things are going, and I'm very good at identifying gaps in markets, which is why I was able to build a successful business in the past. And so that's just why what I'm going to continue to do is find those gaps and attack them.
And so that, it's interesting because you're all the way back at the beginning, you've come full circle and you're back to doing that same model again, right? Where you're finding those gaps, identifying them and going to take advantage. You're really truly getting that arbitrage, right? And really taking advantage of it. So what's next for Chris? What do you see happening next?
Well, I've gotten to the point now where, last year we did about $550,000, maybe somewhere around there. This year to date, we're already at $1.7 million, and I would expect that by the end of the year, we'll probably be somewhere between $2.2 and $2.5 million in sales this year, somewhere around there. So we did an extremely quick jump, and now I'm back up to having, 22 employees and contractors. And it's gotten to the point to where I literally have everything kind of doing everything on its own. I don't have to be there. I don't have to source anymore. I haven't actually specifically went into a store to source anything in probably 6 months. And so I have everything fully outsourced. I have it's either outsourced or I have employees handling everything. On that part of the business that has to do with Amazon, if I didn't want to, test other things out or, do other things to kind of grow the business, I could probably put in maybe 10 hours a week and I would be able to do nothing outside of that, and it would still operate on its own. But I can't do that.
Right. No, there's no way. I can tell in your voice, there's no chance you're sitting at home, playing canasta with the neighbors, right?
Exactly.
So what's going on?
Yep. So what we started working on is, I've always had a knack for being able to, train people and, keep people motivated on task, because that's what kind of what I learned when I was working at Best Buy. So what I started doing is I really like to start kind of teaching people what not to do and,
right.
build off my failures and actually help other people with their businesses as well. So, a lot of people try and sell information products or things like that just to kind of feed their families and make money. And I'm kind of on the opposite end where I just kind of do it just for fun at this point.
Okay.
So I started a blog at lessonslearnedinbusiness.com that has some very good content on there. And I try to spend a decent amount of time in different Facebook groups and other things like that to kind of help out. I've also kind of helped out a few Amazon sellers from scratch as well. So I started doing that. And then that's kind of sapping up some of my time. And then, of course, building relationships with other sellers and other things, which is something I never did in my old business. I never tried to meet other sellers.
And would you say, Greg Murphy always says this, is that he's got, a pretty good sized staff. And he said, the biggest challenge there is, Steve, I can't talk about my business with them. They just can't relate. Nobody understands. And so he goes to these conferences to be able to have the higher level conversations with people who understand when you say, hey, this isn't working or whatever. So yourself, you had the same thing. Do you think that might have helped way back then? I mean, I'm sure somebody would have said, Chris, wait, what are you doing? What's going on, right? I think guide rails, I think, are pretty – maybe a good way to describe it – really can be beneficial to somebody in business. And I think having that group of people, like-minded people, really can help – and just picture guide rails, right, guardrails, as you're driving down the road. What they do is to keep you in that area, right? I think there's some value there. You agree?
I couldn't agree more at all.
You know, oh, okay, wow.
Probably 10,000% yes, because realistically, I was stubborn in my old business. You know, I was always under the mind that I could do it myself. I could do everything myself. I could not. I didn't have to like do all the work myself, but I could actually operate the business myself. I didn't have to seek out mentors, which a lot of people ask. You know, do you have mentors? Who's mentored you? All the good stuff. The only true mentor I've ever actually had was when I worked at Best Buy, and she taught me management skills. That was the only person I can ever say that I did that, and I didn't. For everything I've done with e-commerce and Amazon, it's all been learned by just either reading blogs or trial and error. I didn't really talk out to anyone at all, and I was just way stubborn on doing that. And that is partially, I believe, why that business failed to begin with. And now, you know, one of the big things I've been attempting to do, at least over the last year, is to reach out to different sellers. And, you know, I've been in the mastermind group now for over a year. That was really cool, because at CES, it was actually the first time we actually met each other in person, and it was pretty awesome. It felt like that we were, you know, like best friends when we actually saw each other. And, you know, there's some pretty heavy hitter sellers in our group, and you know, we share a lot of really good things with each other. So, you know, I would definitely say another takeaway from that particular business failing is to get to know other people and build mastermind groups and actually have people you can talk to bounce ideas off of. And if you are having troubles, a lot of times those people help you out and give you ideas of how to get yourself out of it.
Well, it helped you recognize early on that maybe this isn't working. You know, imagine hearing that, you know, Chris, you're trying this, you've tried it 3 times, it's just not working. Maybe it's time you try something else, or let's tweak it this way. You need that sometimes, because you're probably saying it to yourself, but, you know, at least I do. I can rationalize a lot of stuff, right? Oh, well, that really wasn't so bad. You know, I only lost 2 fingers, and you know, I kept the other 3, right? You know what I mean? But it's so having those, you know, especially the people that will hold you accountable and just say, you know, Chris, what the heck are you doing, right? I mean, that's a great thing. That's great advice. What else? So I'll have lessons learned in business, and I'm looking at the site now. It's got a lot of information on it. It's got a lot of resources available, experiments, your lessons learned, right? So all the good, bad, and ugly is in there, right, that you're talking about. What else do you have going on? Are you a member in one of the groups that you have going right now? You had something going on.
Yeah, I have. I actually have a Facebook group. It's called Grow Your Online Business. And okay. So that's a 100% free group where you can kind of reach out to me and ask questions on there. And then I actually partnered up with Ryan Grant of OnlineSellingExperiment.com.
I'm a big fan. Yep. I love Ryan. He's a smart dude.
Yep. We actually have known each other for a little over a year now. We're in that same mastermind group that I talked about a little bit ago. And we've known each other for about a year now. And, you know, he's a very smart cat, and we've gotten along extremely well. So, you know, looking at another gap that we were looking at, another gap is that there just really isn't any good mastermind groups or really good communities of higher level sellers. There's a lot of communities out there that cater to pretty much any aspect, but there really isn't any good community for those sellers that really are full time and do over $100,000 a year, which, you know, it's possible that some sellers do $100,000 a year and are part-time. I mean, I did it back in the day. But typically when you're doing $100,000 or more in a year, you pretty much know what you're doing. You're not asking where you're buying tape. You're not asking, you know, what's the best box to use, or should I buy this item that's on clearance at Walmart? You know, so
the answer is yes, right? So you're really trying to say, hey, look, and it's not next level. It's like, look, all that learning stuff, you really read Chris Green's book. That's what I always tell people. Read Chris Green's books, or even better, once you read that and you try to sell something, go to Amy Fearman, has a book, and it's exactly, here's how to open your Amazon account, right? And she'll walk you through step by step. Somebody needs to do that. But in this group, you don't want to have that discussion with anyone, right?
Exactly.
You don't want to even think about talking about stuff like that. And so you're trying to get like-minded, right? And they've already, there's a measure of success if they're selling $100,000. They've already proven that they can do it, but they're saying, hey, I want to go up another notch, right? I want to get to that, you know, I always say $30,000 a month is really a place where you can start thinking about this could be a really big income, right? And so, you know, you're trying to help them get to that 350 mark pretty quickly. Is that what you think?
Yeah. So what we're doing is, you know, we put together a community. And it's called the Five Star Seller Society, which is an interesting name, of course.
Is it with an F or with a number?
The number five.
Okay, number five. Number five star seller society.
Yep. And so what that's for 6- and 7-figure Amazon sellers. And what we have as part of that is we have a Facebook group, of course, which is for like-minded sellers, but we're also putting together a website that is going to store a lot of content that is specific to sellers in that range. Also have wholesale leads as well and Black Book of Contractors. And it also has some other content that me and Ryan have written specifically for that type of seller. And what's really cool about it is we started this, it's actually about 2 weeks old now, somewhere around there. We actually started the actual Facebook group portion of it, and we have quite a few people already in the group, and it's amazing the type of conversations we're already having.
Yeah. And that's what you want, right? You really want to immediately get some meat, right? Right into it, right in serious discussions about, hey, I've got a problem. I mean, if I'm reaching out to you, I got a problem and I need an answer. I don't need an answer after fourth quarter. I need an answer now, right? And so when you have seasoned sellers like that, they're like, Ben, they've done that. Here's what you do, or here's how you can handle that. That's great.
Exactly. And, you know, we've had all sorts of great discussions already, you know, some as far as, you know, how do you make a listing perfect to be able to get it ranked on Amazon? We've had discussions around that. We've had discussions around, you know, how do you ungate it? That's a common discussion you see everywhere. But, you know, how do you actually do bulk lookups in for Camel, and Keepa so you can whip through 1,000 items in a very quick manner?
Right.
So, I mean, stuff that a typical, you know, part-time seller that doesn't have a whole lot of experience really just can't relate to a lot of this stuff.
And that's just great. I could see that is a niche that really nobody else is filling, so I agree with you guys. And again, you're partnered with the right guy. I think really a lot of Ryan, one of my most popular interviews, still is to this day. All right, how about you? What else you got going on in the future? Any other big plans? Any other – you're looking out at that vision again, right? What else do we see?
I think what I see is that I'll definitely be putting more time and attention to private label products and, of course, trying to build up we'll definitely be building out that community and potentially catering to that specific community with either, you know, information or anything I can think of to help out that specific community is, I think, where, you know, I can definitely see myself at, because I have all that experience and I can obviously share that. Obviously if someone has questions about where to buy tape, I can answer that, but you know,
you really don't want to have those discussions. Well, that's where they can go in to grow your online business. They can have
exactly.
Those discussions, right? And so the best way to get you is really to start there, right? And grow your online business. And I'll have links to all this stuff, right? And I'll have the Facebook group also linked. You know, Chris, it's an interesting, I mean, I'm sure this isn't easy. Maybe it gets easier every time you tell the story, but I do appreciate your candor and your honesty. It's very difficult to do, and I think people are going to get something from it, because I think you have to factor in risk, and you clearly are factoring in risk now because you're only limiting what you're purchasing. You have to factor in risk when you're building these businesses. Most people go in, hey, I'm going to sell everything. Well, let me tell you, not everything sells. Issue number one. Hey, the price when I sell it, I'm going to make $39,000. Well, that's before somebody else says, oh, wait, you're going to lower your price, then I'll lower mine below you. They're going to make $39,000. So you lower your price, and then it goes down and down and down, right? And so I think that you go in starry-eyed, but if you can have somebody's, you know, colored glasses now, right? Your glasses are colored for sure. It really helps, and I really appreciate you taking the time to do that, because I don't think enough people talk about the downside sometimes to business, right? Everybody's talking about the positives. It's not all rosy, is it?
No, it's not rosy at all. And, you know, we kind of have a running joke in our little mastermind group that if someone fails, it's always me. So.
Oh, man. No, your way. No, you're a great guy. I met you in face-to-face. I looked in the eye. Well, I couldn't look in the eye because you're like 7 feet tall.
Yeah.
I got on a chair and I looked him in the eye. So the Five-Star Seller Society, right? And so you envision that, again, you're making sure people are telling you that. I mean, you have a way of vetting these people to make sure that they are real sellers and that they're selling at that next level, right? You want to make sure that they're not asking about tape.
Nah, we're just letting them all in.
Oh no! Yeah.
I'm kidding.
There's a fee though. This is a paid group, right? So they have to have some stake in the game, right?
Exactly.
What's it cost?
Regular price is $39 a month.
Okay, so it's $39 a month, and for that you get all the stuff that you talked about. And you get to be in a place where you can have the conversation. You can ask the uncomfortable questions because you'll get good, probably candid answers, right? And you'll get
all the guidance.
Yeah, and you'll get, you know, the information on wholesale and the access to the black contractor list. So you're going to give my listeners a special.
Yep.
Oh.
And
I'm interested. I'd like a special. I love – well, now, you know what? I just think that if we can offer value to people, because there are somebody right now that's saying, hey, I'm doing $10,000 a month or $15,000 a month, and I really need to get to that $30,000 a month because that's when I can really make a good full-time income. And how do I do it? Because I'm kind of struggling, right? And so you see them out there asking questions, but they're trying to source and they're trying to do this and they're running around. And so you're giving them a place and you're charging for it, right? You're going to say, hey, my time is some value, so therefore we're going to charge for that service. I don't have a problem with it, but I love the fact that somebody can get a discount to get in it, and it's coming through. If they took the time to listen to this, they can get in there. So I appreciate that. Tell me what the deal is.
Yeah, so when we originally first release, so we release it to our inner circles, and we had a discounted price, and we're going to offer a discounted price to anyone listening to this as well, which the discounted price is $24 a month. So
oh, great.
It gives you a $15 discount, and that is permanent as long as you stay on.
Okay, and so you're going to give me a link that I can put in the podcast?
Yep, I'll actually put it right in the notes there.
Okay.
And so
E-Commerce Momentum Podcast, this is going to be episode 44, so come out and take a look at it, and I'll have a link in there you can click through, and hey, you know what, you can save that money. I appreciate that, and I appreciate you and Ryan. Make sure you mention to Ryan, because I think people will get value from it if they're on the hook. They could say, hey, you know, a little bit of money to go a long way for growing my business. I think that's a smart idea. Like-minded people, especially at the same level. I've been in a couple masterminds, and when you're the smartest guy in the room, that doesn't necessarily work well, right? And I'm not the smartest guy, so then I'm usually on the other end, and that's never a good situation, you know? So you want to have people that are in the same place that will help you all move together. So I think that's great. Chris, I appreciate you taking the time, you know, because I know you're busy. I know you got kids. I know you've got a busy life. But I also appreciate you figuring a way to work with me on my schedule that we could get together. We've been talking for a long time about trying to make this work a bunch of different times. And you work with me. And I appreciate that more than you know. I wish you nothing but continued success. I'm excited for you. I can't wait to see what you're doing next. And I wish you nothing but the best. Thanks for coming on.
I appreciate it. Thanks again.
I told you it was going to be a great story. It's, you know, he's the real deal. He's a great guy. He is there to help. He's got a couple groups. So he's got a free group where he posts a lot of information. He also has another group where you can learn from his mistakes. And he outlines what his mistakes are. And I think it's a great read. And I think there's a lot of valuable information in there. Him and Ryan Grant teamed up for a group where you can pay a fee to join, but you get 38% off by using the link on E-Commerce Momentum Podcast, episode 44, right on the page. It's right there. 38% off, and you get to keep the discount as long as you stay in the group. That's a big deal. So if you've been thinking about getting in a mastermind, but you want to make sure that you're getting in with similar level or higher level sellers, which I think is important if you're going to rise up, you really got to up your game, this might be the right group for you. Again, the link is there. Give it a shot if you think there's value. I really appreciate you listening. I hope you take the time to go out to ecommercemomentum.com and take a look around the site as we add more posts and more blog information. So take care. Thanks again.
Thanks for listening to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast. All the links mentioned today can be found at ecommercemomentum.com under this episode number. Please remember to subscribe and like us on iTunes.